Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, a number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. And while you're there, give me a follow at GoForItGant, and you will not be disappointed. Expected today to be joined by 49er safety Madiu Williams. And Madiu is going to talk about the big game that he played in last week, 49ers and Giants. We're going to get his thoughts on that game. And we're going to also talk to him about his foundation. This man was the 2010 Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year. So he knows a lot about doing work, not only on the football field, but doing work in the community. So we're going to talk to Madiu Williams today. And also we're going to be joined by 2012 Hall of Fame finalists, 11-time Pro Bowler, the great Willie Rofe. And Willie is going to talk to us about what happened. What happened? What happened this week, last week I should say, in that NFC title game and in that AFC title game? What happened in championship weekend? And we're going to go over that with the great Willie Rofe. So Madiu Williams and Willie Rofe will join us here today. And I want to start with championship weekend. At championship weekend, it was some good football. You were not disappointed by the type of football that you saw last Sunday. One went to overtime. One should have went to overtime. I mean, both of those games came down to the end. They came down to the end. And one of those games, you needed a little extra time to get it done. But you look at this, those football games. I want to start with the Giants and 49ers. I mean, that was a great football game. That was a defensive battle, especially in that second half. That was a defensive battle. And I was saying to myself watching that game that you look at that game. If Kyle Williams doesn't fumble that second time in overtime, in watching that game, you got the sense that game, they would still be playing right now. I mean, you got the sense that any of those defenses were not going to let the other team score. They just were not going to let them do it. The Giants, that defensive line brought the wood. The 49ers defensive line did as well. I mean, both of these teams played top-notch, big-time, championship-caliber defense in that particular game. And I said, and watching before this game last week, that this game would come down to turnovers. This game would come down to turnovers because of the way both of these two teams play defense. This game was going to come down to turnovers. And the San Francisco 49ers were the ones who committed to turnovers at inopportune times. One and two times. I mean, the Kyle Williams fumble in the fourth quarter there. And then the Kyle Williams fumble, well, Kyle Williams muff as the ball went off his knee in the fourth quarter there, and then the fumble there in overtime. It gave the Giants short fields. In both of those occasions, it gave the Giants short fields, and in both of those occasions, the Giants scored touchdowns. Not a touchdown, they scored 10 points, a touchdown to tie the game, to take the lead, actually, and then a touchdown to win the game in overtime. So those two turnovers led to 10 points and 10 big points in that particular football game. 10 big points. And I'm looking at the Giants now, their drive chart, the drive summary. You look at it, their first drive, their first few drives in the first half, 9 plays, 14 yards and a punt, 9 plays, 35 yards and a punt. Third drive, 10 plays, 69 yards and a touchdown. Another drive, 5 plays, 22 yards and a punt. Second quarter, again, 10 plays, 51 yards and a field goal. And then you come to the second half, and it totally changes. 3 plays, 9 yards. Third quarter, just we're in the third quarter now. Second drive in the third quarter, 5 plays, 22 yards. Third drive in the third quarter, 4 plays, 12 yards. Fourth drive in the third quarter, 3 plays, 5 yards. We're in the fourth quarter now, and then you had the muff by Kyle Williams, and the Giants had the short field, 6 plays, 29 yards and a touchdown. After that, 3 plays, 7 yards and a punt. Another drive, 3 plays, minus 5 yards and a punt. Another drive in the fourth quarter still, 5 plays, 31 yards and a punt. So you get what's going on here. The 49ers defense was not going to let the Giants score. At least if the Giants would have a long field, there is no way they would score. Without the benefit of a short field, in my mind, the New York Giants were not going to score again. Without the benefit of a short field. But they got the benefit of a short field twice. And that led to 10 points. 10 big points, and those 10 big points were the difference in the football game. And you hate to put it on one person and blame it on one to two plays because football is the ultimate team sport, the ultimate team game. But if Kyle Williams, more than likely, and we're speculating at this point, but more than likely, if he does not fumble or have the muff, that first in the fourth quarter and then the fumble in overtime. To me, if that does not happen, the San Francisco 49ers are on the way to the Super Bowl. And we're talking about the 49ers as they prepare for the Super Bowl. Alex Smith, the improbable story, him getting to the Super Bowl. 7 years, 7 different offensive coordinators, so on and so forth. With Alex Smith. But Alex Smith in this particular football game was not great. The 49ers were abysmal on third down conversions, 1 for 13. It's hard to win when you're 1 for 13 on third downs. It's truly hard to win. But you got to get that. And even though the 49ers did not get to the Super Bowl, you got to give them a lot of credit for the season that they had. I mean, 13-3, second best record in the NFC. And you look at them, no one expected this. No one expected this. No one expected this 49er team to get this far. They got far, very far, and they should have got farther. They should be in the Super Bowl. They were that good this year, especially on the defensive side of the football. I mean, moving forward with that defense, the Smith boys, Justin and Alden Smith, Bowman and Patrick Willis, Goldston, and then Carlos Rogers were a good year for them, those boys. The San Francisco 49ers are in good shape on the defensive side of the football. You look at the offensive side of football, you say they got to make some changes. They need another wide receiver. Braylon Edwards, they brought him in thinking he could be that guy, but he was hurt throughout the course of the season and ultimately released near the end of the season. Michael Crabtree, a nice young receiver, but he's got to get better. And they need somebody opposite of him. They need to be a little bit more dangerous on the outside. Vernon Davis, didn't have a great regular season, but had a very great, had a great playoff. Not a great regular season, but a great playoff for him. And he got it done in the playoffs. They wouldn't be in this position. They wouldn't have been in the NFC title game if it wasn't for him, and they probably would not have been in the Giants game if it was not for him. I mean, he made two big plays for them, two big touchdowns, and those touchdowns should have stood up. They should have stood up. And it's hard. I mean, you look at it with those fumbles. You look at it. That New York Giants defense, that's an offense, excuse me, is a very good offense with a lot of weapons. Eli's playing his tail off, and yes, he is playing like an elite quarterback. Victor Cruz is getting it done. Nix, Manningham, all those boys on the outside, they have some weapons on the offensive side of football. They have some weapons. So when you give a team like the New York Giants a short field, it's hard to stop them. It's hard to stop them. But again, in watching that game, if the Giants do not get those short fields on those two occasions, in my mind, the 49ers would have won that game because I didn't see the Giants driving down on a long field to beat this ball club, the 49ers. I didn't see the Giants doing it. I did not see the Giants doing that. Give a lot of credit to the 49ers defense, but give a lot of credit to this Giants special teams. There are three phases to the game: offense, defense, and special teams. Special teams are the reason. One of the reasons. You can't say it's the only reason. But one of the reasons that the New York Giants will be playing a week from now in Indy against the New England Patriots in a rematch of a few years ago. That is the reason why. Special teams. Special teams is the reason that the San Francisco 49ers are home, and special teams is the reason that the New York Giants will continue on to the Super Bowl. Give the New York Giants a lot of credit. This is a team, defensively, that has stepped up their game. They have stepped up their game big time and to put them in this position, a position to win another Super Bowl, a position for Eli Manning to get another Super Bowl. The New York Giants, a team that was 7-7, coming off a horrible loss to the Washington Redskins. A team a lot of people left for dead. But a team that found a way to turn this thing around. They turned it around, beat the Jets. And I look at the Giants, to me, their biggest play of the season was made by Victor Cruz against the New York Jets. If you remember that game, the Jets were in control, up 7-3. They had the Giants pinned back. Victor Cruz makes a big catch, puts on a nice little move, and he was off to the races, 99 yards. The Giants went up 10-7 there, and from there they took control of the game. That changed the season for me. That changed that game, and ultimately it led to them winning that game, and ultimately led to them beating the Cowboys last game of the season and getting into the playoffs. That game right there. But more so that play. That play by Victor Cruz. That play by Victor Cruz where he put a nice little move and he just was off to the races. Nice little move on Cromartie, Antonio Cromartie, and it was off to the races. Home run, Victor Cruz and the New York Giants. And ultimately the New York Giants would beat the Jets in that particular ball game. give the New York Giants a lot of credit for being in this position. Give the defense a lot of credit. Perry Fuel and that defense really turned things around. Really turned things around. 22 sacks in the last five games. That's getting it done. Umiura, Tuck, they're getting it done. And I look at that secondary, to me, it is still a little suspect. I think that secondary is a little suspect. Not a fan. But the way that defensive line is playing, it may not even matter. Because if they're getting after the quarterback the way they're getting after the quarterback, it won't even matter. That front seven will hide all the deficiencies. All the deficiencies in the secondary. It will hide all those deficiencies. And it has in these playoffs. And we'll see what happens moving forward. Going to the AFC now. The New England Patriots.
Hey, you know what? Before you.
The New England Patriots. They're back to the Super Bowl. Brady and Belichick are back to the Super Bowl for the fifth time. They've done it again. And they were very fortunate to be in this position. Considering that you look at it, Lee Evans, Flacco hit Lee Evans in the end zone. Lee Evans dropped the football. And initially, before it went to replay, I was thinking that it may have been a touchdown, that he had it. Lee Evans had the ball long enough. But on replay, it became obvious that he did not. I would have liked to have seen that play be reviewed. I really would, because it was that close. It was that close. And both of these defenses play well. And watch out now, the New England Patriots are playing better defense, too. They are playing some better defense right now. I mean, they're letting teams, they're averaging only 15 points. Teams are only scoring 15 points in these playoffs, in the playoffs against this team. This team is playing better football on the defensive side. And they're playing better football at the right time. And how about Vince Wilfork? Vince Wilfork was in the backfield. He lived in that Patriot backfield. Not the Patriot backfield, the Ravens backfield in that game. He lived there. He could have took up, made a home there, because he was there very often. And they were able to do a good job on Ray Rice. 21 carries, 67 yards. And that was, you look at that game, you figured one of the advantages that the Ravens would have is the run game and the Patriots' inability to stop the run. I mean, this was the 31st-ranked defense in the regular season. So teams had their way with this defense. Teams were able to run the ball on this defense. Teams had their way with this New England Patriots defense. And Joe Flacco played well. 306 yards passing. Had the Ravens in position to win that particular football game. Had the Ravens in position. He couldn't really have done more. Ed Reed challenged him. He accepted the challenge and went out and played big-time football. He played big-time football. 306 yards, had the ball in Lee Evans' hands, which would have been the game winner. Then had the team set up for a chip shot field goal. A chip shot field goal. 32 yards. You cannot miss a 32-yard field goal as a kicker. Below 40 yards should be darn near automatic. Should be darn near automatic. Should be automatic. And the Ravens now, Joe Flacco, the questions were coming at him fast and furious. Lamar Woodley said he couldn't win a Super Bowl. Ed Reed questioned him. But the man has gotten to these playoffs each year as a starter. He's been in these playoffs. Been to the AFC title game twice. Was competitive in both of those games. Competitive in both of those football games. The two times he did go to the AFC championship game. He's been there twice. He's been there twice. So you got to give him credit for that. But it's time for him to get his team over the top. And the reality is, in the National Football League, you get this far, championship game, you get this far, and you lose. There may not be another opportunity to get back here. You just never know in this league. With injuries and teams stepping up, teams getting better real quick. A couple moves here, a couple moves there. And like the 49ers, a couple moves here, a couple moves there. And essentially, it's the same team, but, I mean, you bring in a Carlos Rogers, who really helped solidify the secondary. But, again, moves here, moves there, and you put your team in position to be better. So you just never know if you'll get another opportunity like that. You just never know if you'll get another opportunity like that. I mean, you look at the opportunity that the Ravens and the 49ers had, and to see them lose the way they lost. Cundiff missing a 32-yard field goal, Kyle Williams to two fumbles. I mean, that's a tough way to lose. A tough way to lose. You don't want special teams. You don't want to lose on special teams. You want special teams to be elite. You just want it to be even. You don't want to mess things up on special teams. And like I said, the 49er and Giants game, I said it was going to come down to turnovers. I thought the Giants would be the team that would make the turnovers. But it was the 49ers who made the two big turnovers, one in the fourth quarter and one in overtime. And going back to the Ravens and Patriots, give the Ravens a lot of credit. They played some good football. They played some real good football there. And they really did a good job on Tom Brady. They did a good job on Tom Brady in that game. They did a good job against him. That defense did a good job against Brady. 239 yards for Brady, two interceptions. 57.5 QB rating for Tom Brady. So they did a good job against Brady. But the Patriots were able to run the ball pretty well in that game. Green Ellis, 68 yards on the ground, the touchdown. He was pretty effective for the New England Patriots, and those tight ends did what those tight ends have done throughout the course of the season. Gronkowski, 5 for 87. Hernandez, 7 for 66. So those tight ends did what the tight ends have done throughout the course of this season. Give those tight ends a lot of credit. And give the Patriots a lot of credit. Because they're back in the Super Bowl, and it is a rematch. It is a rematch. Tom Brady against Eli Manning. One more time. These two get it on. And as I look at this game, I haven't decided where I'm leaning to, who I'm leaning to. Haven't decided who I think is going to win. But I'm pretty close. I'm in the middle still, but I'm pretty close to where I want to go in terms of my decision on who I think is going to win this game. I know who I want to win, but I'm not sure in terms of who's going to win. But I'm close to making that decision. I'll put it to you this way. I can't see Brady and Belichick losing to the same team twice in a Super Bowl. I can't see it. I cannot see that happening. And you look at it. These two teams played earlier in the season. Very good game. And Eli Manning led the Giants down the field to win the game. Eli Manning, big-time drive in that game, and ultimately the New York Giants would win that game in Foxborough, and a lot of people were surprised, I being one of them. I was surprised that the Giants were able to go into Foxborough and beat the New England Patriots. Surprised. Very surprised. But Eli Manning, and at that point, the Giants were 6-2 and playing some big-time football and on top of the NFC East. But the Giants, down 20-17, Eli Manning, big-time drive against the Patriots, in that regular season contest, let him down the field. And Eli had talked, and you looked at that game, you figured after Tom Brady had led the Patriots down the field to score the touchdown to take the lead, that the game was over. You figured that the game was over. But the New York Giants, Eli Manning. Elite quarterback, Eli Manning. 7-3 in the playoffs, Eli Manning led the Giants down the field against the Patriots in the regular season. And ultimately, the Patriots would lose that game to the New York Giants 24-20. I think both teams are a little different at this point. I think the Giants' defense is a little better. I think the Patriots' defense is playing a little better. You wonder about the health of Rob Gronkowski. And how much that will play in this game? You wonder about that? You wonder? Gronkowski's a big-time tight end, put up big-time numbers, had a big-time year. He is one of the reasons that the Patriots are in the Super Bowl. Those tight ends, Gronkowski and Hernandez. You wonder how healthy Gronkowski will be. He has 2 weeks to get himself right. Obviously, I mean, he's going to play in that game. But he has 2 weeks now to get himself right. And hopefully he can get himself right if you're a Patriots fan. And hopefully he's right and playing good football if you want to beat the New York Giants the way they're playing. But both of these teams are playing well. And both of these teams both of these teams have elite quarterbacks, Eli Manning and Tom Brady. Both are an elite quarterback in this league. Both are elite quarterbacks. Manning and Brady are elite. They are elite quarterbacks in this league. It's time to give Eli his just due. And I was thinking about this week. One playoff game, who would you go with? Would you go with Eli or would you go with his brother, Peyton. Who would you go with? Eli or his brother, Peyton? And if you look at these two in the playoffs, at first, you first hear that, you say, you know what? I'm going with Peyton. But you look at these two in the playoffs. Peyton Manning, under 500 in the playoffs, 9-10 as a starter in the playoffs. Eli Manning, 7-3 as a starter in the playoffs. Eli Manning, 6-1 on the road and neutral site games in the playoffs. Eli Manning. Yes, Eli Manning. Eli Manning. 7-3 in the playoffs. His brother Peyton. 9-10 in the playoffs. 9-10 in the playoffs. Granted, Peyton's played more in the playoffs, but he's been in the league longer. But Eli Manning has been the man this season and has been the man in these playoffs. Has been an absolute beast in these playoffs. An absolute beast in these playoffs. And just getting it done. The question becomes, who would you rather have? Would you rather have Peyton Manning, Hall of Fame, who's Peyton Manning's going to definitely be a Hall of Famer when this thing is all said and done. He's going to be a Hall of Famer when it's all said and done. Would you rather have Peyton or would you rather have Eli in the playoffs? And you just look at Eli, some of his wins in the playoffs. At Green Bay this year, at San Francisco. I mean, you're winning NFC title games and the other team's building. You're going to other teams' buildings and winning in the championship games. He did it against the Packers in that memorable run in 2007, and he did it against the Packers again in the divisional round, and he did it to the 49ers this year in the championship game. Give Eli credit for all that. Give that man a lot of credit for all that. And the question becomes, who would you rather have, Eli or Peyton? Who would you rather have? Who would you rather have? Eli has been clutch during his time in the playoffs. But Peyton Manning struggled, especially earlier in his career in these playoffs. He struggled. He really did. He really has struggled. But Eli, on the other hand, has really, really gotten it done in the playoffs, in the postseason. He's gotten it done in the postseason. And that's impressive. That's impressive. And then Eli, you look at him, 19 fourth quarter comebacks, 23 game winning drives throughout his career to this point. And Eli Manning this year, 15 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, an NFL record. So that tells me, or at least shows me, that this guy's clutch. That shows me that he's clutch. and clutch when it matters most. Clutch when it matters most. And when you're in a Super Bowl, that matters. How about that big time drive in the Super Bowl where you hit Plaxico Burress to win that game? That's big time. That's big time. That is big time. Peyton Manning, 35 fourth quarter comebacks, 46 game winning drives. But again, he's been playing a lot longer than Eli. He's been playing a lot longer than Eli. And if Eli Manning wins this Super Bowl this year, could you make the argument that Eli Manning has had a better career than Peyton Manning? And you look at Eli in the fourth quarter, I said it before, 1,700 yards passing, 15 touchdowns. An NFL record, 15 touchdowns. In the fourth quarter. That, my friends, is getting it done. And Eli has gotten it done throughout the course of this year, gotten it done in these playoffs. Eli or Peyton, you had one game to win. Eli Manning or Peyton Manning? And just judging by some of the luck that Eli has, you look at the Hail Mary to Akeem Nicks this year, you look at the pass to David Tyree in the Super Bowl, I think I would go with Eli based on luck. I mean, the guy gets lucky at times. He just throws the football up sometimes and it just falls in the hands of the receiver. Just happens to fall in the hands of the receivers. The man has had a great year. And I think if I had one game, and I had to choose between Eli Manning or Peyton Manning, I think I would choose the one, the only, Eli Manning over his brother, Peyton. Just one game. And you look at Peyton in his career, especially early in his playoff career, not very good. Three straight losses. So early on in his career, he was abysmal in playoff situations. And it took him a while to break through and finally get past those New England Patriots. He did it. And then if you look at it the last time, he was in the Super Bowl against the New Orleans Saints. He threw a big interception to Tracy Porter, which pretty much put that football game away. Tracy Porter with the big interception that won that game for the Saints and won the Super Bowl for the Saints. Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, the way Eli has played in these playoffs and in the playoffs period in general, the way Eli Manning has performed in the fourth quarter this year, the way he's performed the year he took the Giants to the Super Bowl back in 2007, the way he played in that final drive to beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, the big touchdown pass to Plaxico Burress. Eli Manning, if I had to choose between Eli and Peyton for one game, I think I would choose Eli. I think I would choose Eli, and I can't believe I'm saying this. I cannot believe I'm saying this. And when Eli made those comments this summer, when he told the world that, yes, he is an elite quarterback. Yes, put him up there with the likes of Brady. Put him up there with the likes of Rodgers, Phillip Rivers, Roethlisberger. Put him up there with those guys. Drew Brees, put him up there with him. He needs to be mentioned with those guys. He's that good. Eli said it. And at the time he said it, I was very skeptical. The time he said it, I didn't believe him. I laughed, actually. But right now, Eli has the last laugh. He's laughing better than all of us. As he's one game away from winning his second Super Bowl. One game away from winning his second Super Bowl. One game away. It's hard to believe it. It is hard to believe it. But it's real. It's true. Eli Manning and the New York Giants are one game away from getting to the Super Bowl. One game away from getting to the Super Bowl. Not getting to the Super Bowl, to winning the Super Bowl. One game away. Wow. From winning a second Super Bowl. And they have a legitimate chance to win it. Never thought I would say that. And speaking of Mannings, Peyton Manning and his owner, Jim Irsay of the Indianapolis Colts, had a little war of words this week. Manning made some comments to the Indianapolis Star and how he said he was walking around the complex and he found that a lot of people were on eggshells. And how things were a little different, a lot different than what he remembered around the Colts complex. A lot different. And then Jim Irsay shot back at Peyton. And he said, I don't think it's in the best interest to paint the horseshoe in a negative light. I really don't. The horseshoe always comes first. And I think one thing he always known, because he's been around it so long, is that, you know, you keep it in family. If you got a problem, you talk to each other. It's not about campaigning or anything like that. Basically said Peyton's a politician. Being a politician. And then Peyton, a few hours later, told the Indianapolis Star that he didn't mean or did not want to make or create a public situation, a public argument, a public spat, if you will, between the two. And ultimately, the two have reconciled. The two now are on the same page, according to these two. And when I first heard these things going around between Peyton and Jim Irsay, I'm thinking maybe this is the start of the divorce between Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts. I'm thinking maybe the seeds are being planted for this to happen. We all know that the Colts, unless they're stupid and absolutely dumb, are going to select Andrew Luck as the number one pick. We all know that's going to happen. What we don't know what's going to happen is what's going to happen in March. March 8th, to be exact. Big day. On that day, if Peyton Manning is still an Indianapolis Colt, he will receive a $28 million bonus. If he's still on the Colts, after March 8th, he will receive, again, a $28 million bonus. So that's going to be a big decision. What happens there? What do you do if you're the Colts? It's kind of hard to see Peyton Manning in any other uniform but the Colts. I mean, it's just hard to envision that. But the reality is, it has happened in the past. Joe Montana was a Kansas City Chief. After all the years he spent in San Francisco, no one ever expected to see Joe Montana in any other uniform but the uniform of the 49ers. It happens. It happens. And so you wonder, what's going to happen here? What is going to happen here? I think if he does remain with the Colts, they're going to have to try to work something out with that money. I cannot see the Colts giving a guy coming off three neck surgeries that bonus. I can't see it. I can't see it. But they really cleaned house in Indy. The Paulines are gone. The coach is gone. So they really cleaned house in Indy. They cleaned house in Indy. They hired Chuck Pagano, former defensive coordinator for the Ravens, the Baltimore Ravens. And they moved in a totally, totally different direction. And so, again, you get rid of your general manager. You get rid of your coach. You wonder what's going to happen with Reggie Wayne and everything. To me, in some respect, it's kind of logical that you go and change the whole organization, draft Andrew Luck, and do something with Peyton Manning. Whether it's a trade or whether it's an out-and-out release. Because you get rid of Caldwell, you get rid of general manager, it sounds like it's a whole new regime. Not sound like it is a whole new regime. And it sounds like you're almost starting over. So you might as well start over with one of the biggest positions, the hardest position to fill, and maybe the most important position on your team, and that is the quarterback. And that is Andrew Luck of Stanford. Maybe it's time to do that. Maybe it's time to do that. If it was me, I think I'd try to bring Peyton back. Because you never know. I mean, you know, Andrew Luck, everyone's saying he's can't miss. But there's been a lot of people in this league who's coming to this league, and we said we're can't miss. A lot of people who's coming to this league, and we've said we're can't miss. We've said it before. But you look at Andrew Luck, and in my opinion, I think you bring them both back, and Andrew Luck's contract will be manageable. It's not like the rookie contracts of the past. He's going to have manageable money. So you have a decision to make if you're the Colts. You have a decision to make. And then you also have to ask Peyton Manning in a lot of ways. If you're Peyton Manning, do you want to go into a rebuilding situation? Because that's essentially what the Colts are going to be. Their defense has gotten old. It's going to be a rebuilding situation for the Colts. Do you want to be a part of that if you're Peyton? Or at this stage of your career, 36 years old? You're 36 years old now. Well, we'll be 36 at the end of March, and we'll be 36 when the season starts. So, do you want to be a part of a rebuilding situation? Do you want to be a part of a rebuilding situation? I mean, if you're 36, I don't know if I would be. I don't know if I would want to be. a part of rebuilding, a part of a rebuilding situation. I don't think I would want to be a part of that. So if you're Peyton Manning, you got some things to think about. You have some things to think about. Do you want to be a part of a rebuilding situation? Would you want to be a part of that? And again, at 36, I'm not sure if I would want to be. I'm not sure if I would want to be. So I wouldn't blame him if he wanted out because of that. And you look at what's out there in terms, let's just say hypothetically the Colts decide, you know what, it's time to move on from Peyton Manning. It's time to move on from Peyton Manning and start the Andrew Luck era in Indianapolis. It's time to do that. So what happens now if you're Peyton Manning? What happens now? And I look around the league, and there's some teams that could use quarterbacks and teams who some could argue are a quarterback away, a decent quarterback away from being a championship contender, being a championship team. Obviously, the New York Jets are a team who you can make an argument with Peyton Manning become a championship contender. That's one team. That's one team. You look around the league. Miami, another team who could use a quarterback. Another team that could definitely use a quarterback is the Miami Dolphins. Matt Moore was your starter for most of the year last year in Miami. That's all you need to know about that position. They could use an upgrade. They could use an upgrade. And then you look around. You look some more. You look a little closer. How about the San Francisco 49ers? How about the San Francisco 49ers? Do you look at, if you have an opportunity to get a healthy Peyton Manning, do you make that move? Do you make that move? Alex Smith, as good as he was this year, 17 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, over 3,000 yards passing, as good as he was this year, if you have an opportunity to get a Peyton Manning, a healthy Peyton Manning, and the way that defense is in San Francisco, that defense is ready and built to win now. That defense can win now. And like I said before, when you get as far as the Niners got, it's tough because you have all offseason and you just never know what could happen. You just never know what could happen. You want to get back to that spot. You want to get back to that position. You want to have the type of record that you had in the regular season. You want to have all those things. But injuries find a way to sneak in. Injuries make a difference. Other teams reload, rebuild, get better. Those things happen. And then you're saying to yourself now, what an opportunity I missed out on. Alex Smith, yes, throughout his career, he wasn't that great. And this year, he was good. Not great, good. Good, not great. So, and you look at that. You look at that. If you have an opportunity to get your hands on Peyton Manning, if you're the San Francisco 49ers, if you have that opportunity, you really better think about it. And I'm not sure of their cap situation. Not too sure about their cap situation in San Francisco. But to me, if you have an opportunity, and Alex Smith is a free agent this year. He is a free agent. If you have an opportunity to get an upgrade, and Peyton Manning is that, just that, an upgrade. If you have an opportunity to do that, you have to do it. You have to do it. You have to. You have to. And if you're not going to do it, you have to at least think hard about it. You have to. You really have to. As good as Alex Smith has been this year, as good as he has been this year, can you expect him to do it again next year? Seasons change. Players change. Talent around him changes. The talent that goes against him will change. Do you have to upgrade the quarterback position? Alex Smith was great against the Saints, but he wasn't that great against the Giants. He was okay against the Giants. He was a game manager against the Giants. He was a game changer against the Saints. The question becomes, does he take that next step? Does he take that next step? Does he take that next step? Or does he go back to the Alex Smith that we all know? Does he go back to that guy? Does he go back to that guy? I mean, you look at last year for Alex Smith. 14 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Played 11 games. 2009, 18 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. 2006, 16 touchdowns, 16 interceptions. I mean, rather pedestrian numbers there. Average numbers there. Those are average numbers. Those are truly average numbers. Do you decide to upgrade there? If Peyton Manning and you have an Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts decide, you know what, we can't do this no more. It's best that you move on, and we move on with Andrew Luck. And if you're Peyton Manning and if you're the 49ers and you're thinking about it, you're looking at it. To me, it's a perfect marriage. It's a perfect marriage. An opportunity to get a guy in Peyton Manning who was great, very good, his final year 2 years ago since he did not play this year. He was very good. He was very good for the Indianapolis Colts. He was very good. Now, if you have an opportunity to get a guy that 2 years ago, 4,700 yards passing, 33 touchdowns, 91.9 QB rating. If you have an opportunity to get that, Peyton Manning's healthy, and you have an opportunity to get that, you got to find a way to make that happen. If there's an opportunity, you have to make that happen. New York Jets, if you have an opportunity, you need to make that happen. San Francisco 49ers, if you have an opportunity, you need to make that happen. The Miami Dolphins, if you have an opportunity, you need to make that happen. You need to make that happen. That's got to happen. You're taking a risk with Peyton Manning, I know, with the neck and everything. But every player is essentially one play away. If you look at every person is one situation away from death. Every player is one play away from a career-ending injury. That's life. That is truly life. We are all one play, one move, one situation away from death. We are all one play from retirement. If you have an opportunity to get Peyton Manning, San Francisco, if you have an opportunity to get Peyton Manning, New York Jets, if you have an opportunity to get the Peyton Manning, Miami Dolphins, you better go do it. You better go do it. The second hour of Go For It starts now. I'm Paul Gant. Second hour starts right now. And in the second hour, we're going to be joined by 49er safety Madiju Williams. And we're going to get his thoughts on the game that happened this past weekend against the New York Giants. So we're going to get his thoughts there. And he's doing a lot of great work in the community with the Madiju Williams Foundation. I mean, he's doing some great work in the community. Last year's 2010 Walter Payton Award winner for his work in the community, NFL Man of the Year. He's doing big-time work in the community, big-time work on the field, and we're going to talk to him in this hour. So make sure you stick around for him, as he will be joining us here in this second hour. Stick and stay, stick and stay, stick and stay. I want to move now to the NBA, and I want to move to Dwight Howard in the Orlando Magic. Dwight Howard, throughout the course of this offseason, has stated a few times that he wants to be traded. He wants to leave Orlando. The Magic, to this point, you know, he's added teams to the list. I know recently he added the Clippers to his list of teams that he wanted to go to. Lakers were reportedly the Mavericks, the Knicks as well. I know the Nets were a part of it at one point. I mean, he wanted to go to all those different places. So a bunch of these different places were in the mix for Dwight Howard. And you look at this whole situation, it's tiresome now. It has to be a distraction to the Magic team, players, coaches, everybody. A la LeBron James. But you look at the situation with Dwight Howard. Yesterday, he called out his team, a team that lost three in a row, including they got beat bad by Boston, and then they blew a 27-point lead on Thursday against the Celtics again and lost that game. And then they go to New Orleans to face the Hornets, and they get blown out 93-67. After the game, Dwight Howard was not happy and called out his teammates. Here's some of what he said. I look at guys and they don't look like they want to play. I told them at halftime, if you don't want to play, just stay in the locker room. Because it don't make sense for a team who we should beat to just demolish us. Howard went on to say, it hurts to get out there and you play your hardest and you expect everybody to play the same way. I'm not calling anybody out by no means, because we all have to get better. But if you don't want to be out there, don't dress up. If you don't want to play, stay home. People work too hard. I want to win a championship. I work too hard every night for anybody to not want to go out there and play hard. Those are the words of Dwight Howard, center for the Orlando Magic. He says he doesn't want to call out his team, but he essentially is calling out his team. He's calling out his team. But Dwight, I got to call you out on some level. Because you look at this whole situation, you want to be traded here, you want to be traded there, and then these are all your rights. I mean, you have rights to do these type of things. you have a right to do these type of things. But maybe the team feels like, hey, you're playing good, you're playing hard, you're playing some big-time basketball this year, you're putting up big-time numbers. But maybe the team feels like that you're quitting on them for not making a commitment to the team, meaning you want to be out. You don't want to play in Orlando. You want to play elsewhere. You want to play in New York. You want to play in Los Angeles. You want to play in Dallas. You want those bright lights in the big city. And those are all your rights. But you got to understand something. This is a distraction. This is a distraction to your team. This is a distraction to your team. So you have to understand that. You have to understand that this is a distraction to your team. You have to understand that too. And I understand you want to be traded. I understand you want to put together a dream team type of situation, like they put together in Miami with Wade, Bosch, and LeBron. Like they're trying to do in New York with Melo and Amari. But Dwight, look what's happening with Melo and Amari. Things are not going very well in New York. Those two are not playing well together. It's not going very well in New York. Your team, the Orlando Magic, are 12-6 right now. You're a pretty decent team. You played pretty decent basketball other than this week. Maybe you want to think about this situation. You talk about wanting to win championships. You want to win championships. Your best shot, your best opportunity to win a championship may be in Orlando. Your best shot may be in Orlando. Look what's happening in New York. Look what's happening in New York. They got the bright lights. They got the big city. But they're not winning basketball games. They're not winning basketball games. You're not winning in New York. You're not. Right now, they're not winning. You added a Tyson Chandler in the offseason. It's still not working for you in New York. Dwight, you sure you want to be a part? You sure you want to go to a situation and kind of build your own dream team, if you will? You sure you want to do that? Is that what you want to do? Is that truly what you want to do? You sure about that? Is that the route you want to take? Is that the route you want to take? I said 12-6. They are actually 12-7. But the Knicks are 7-12. You want a dream team situation. You want a situation where you can go to a big city, big market, get big-time endorsements. Maybe you go to L.A. and become Hollywood, if you will. If that's what you want to be, then so be it. And if you go to the Lakers, yes, that does make them championship caliber. Yes, that happens. But if you go elsewhere, let's say you go to the Nets with Deron Williams, there's no guarantee that that's going to be a championship situation. There's no guarantee of that. And you don't know in terms of if a trade is brokered between the Nets and the Magic. You don't know how depleted or how many players it's going to take. You look at the Knicks, they're depleted from that trade. They are a depleted team because of that trade for Melo. You look at the Denver Nuggets, they're playing some good basketball. They've taken those pieces in Denver and turned them around into a good situation. The Nuggets played good basketball last year after they initially made the trade. They're continuing to play good basketball. 14-5. They are 14-5. They're playing some good basketball in Denver. Good basketball in Denver. Very good basketball. Gallinari signed a contract extension with the Nuggets, but he's balling this year. He's getting it done. They brought in Raymond Felton. Raymond Felton was a part of that trade for Melo, but they turned Raymond Felton into Andre Miller, and he's playing some good lights-out basketball for the Nuggets. And Gallinari, the guy you traded for Melo, is averaging 17 points and leading the team in scoring. So you look at that trade. You look at that trade. Right now, the Knicks are still finding and struggling to replace those parts that they traded away. And then in order to get Tyson Chandler, they had to amnesty Chauncey Billups. And granted, Baron Davis is a guy they have waiting in the wings. He's trying to get himself right so he can get back. There was talk that he might be back this weekend, so we'll see what happens there. But the New York Knicks right now are a team that's not playing good basketball and a team that in a lot of ways are trying to do that. Melo and Amari are trying to do that dream scenario, that dream team situation. And Melo's, you look at it, Carmelo's really had not had a great year for the New York Knicks. He really has not had a great year. And also, Amari Stoudemire is struggling as well. Both of those guys are struggling at this point. They really are. And this all could be byproducts of the lockout. I mean, these guys, you look at it, they both like to have the ball in their hands. They both are volume shooters, volume scorers. They both are similar in a lot of ways. Very similar in a lot of ways. Very similar. But you look at those guys, Melo shooting under 40%. Stoudemire is averaging 17 points. Melo's points are down 23 for him. Down from a year ago. And like I said, he's not shooting the ball very well. I mean, you look at him, his numbers, let's start from last Friday, 120. So let's start from January 20th on last Friday, 11 for 26, 35 points, and a loss to the Bucks. At home, mind you. 25 points against the Nuggets, a loss to the Nuggets at home, but he was 10 for 30 from the field. 10 for 30. Again, not a very good shooting night. Against Charlotte, a victory, 111 to 78. They got the victory against the Bobcats. But Melo was 0 for 7 with 1 point. 0 for 7 with 1 point. Not very good. And then you have Wednesday against the Cavaliers. 5 for 14. Only 15 points in a loss to Cleveland. And he was out with injury, with a wrist and ankle injury against the Miami Heat. So he did not play. And ultimately the Knicks would lose as Dwayne Wade made his return. The Knicks would lose to the Heat last night in Miami. It's not working out well for Melo and Amari, and the Knicks right now. And so the question becomes, and Dwight Howard, you need to look at that, and you need to think about that, and you need to ask yourself and make sure that you really want to get traded elsewhere. Make sure that, you know, you really want to be in New York, in New Jersey, wherever else you have, in Dallas, and with the Los Angeles Lakers. I mean, if you get with the Lakers, you get with the Mavericks, you're in a good situation. You get with the Nets, it's up in the air. It might turn into a situation with Melo and Amari. Might be that type of situation. But I will say this. In a lockout shortened season, it's hard to really get a gauge on some of these teams. It's really hard to get a gauge. You remember the Knicks back in 99, eighth seed. But as the eighth seed, they were a very good eighth seed. And then they go into and beat the Heat in a five-game series, beat them in five in the first round. And I heard Jeff Van Gundy talking about it last night. But that game saved his job and saved his career as a coach with the Knicks many, many years ago. But you look at that. This is the type of year now where if you can get into the playoffs and get right, get hot, anything can happen. The Knicks were like that. They struggled throughout the course of that strike-shortened year, that lockout-shortened year. But in the playoffs, they found themselves. They found themselves. And in finding themselves, they were able to get far. They were able to make it to the NBA Finals. They would ultimately lose to the Spurs, but they were able to get to the Finals. So this is the type of year. The Celtics are off to a slow start, 9-9. They're off to a slow start. The Lakers are kind of off to a slow start as well. They're 11-8, but not playing great basketball. This is the type of year. This is the type of year to me where if you can make the playoffs, you have a very, very good shot. If you can get your team right, be healthy, be 100% and playing good basketball, you're in a good situation. You are in a good situation, and you could get far if you're playing well and if you're right come playoff time. And that's what I look at with the Knicks, if they can get right, and who knows, once Baron Davis comes, could be a totally different situation. To get that leadership at the point guard position. But you look at the Knicks and this whole and Mike D'Antoni style and everything, and Charles Barkley said it, he doesn't believe that you can win championships with the Mike D'Antoni style, kind of up and down basketball, up tempo. But one thing about the Mike D'Antoni style of basketball is that your teams don't defend. When he was with Phoenix, they didn't defend. With the Knicks do not defend. So you wonder, can you really win a championship with this Mike D'Antoni style? The Mavericks, in some respect, were an up-and-down type of team in a lot of ways, an up-tempo transition type of team that didn't play any defense. Until last year, they changed the formula a little bit. Rick Carlisle came in and changed the formula a little bit, and he had a guy like Tyson Chandler who came in there and helped them out in terms of the rebounding and on the defensive end. Then you had Deshaun Stevenson guy, glue guys like a Deshaun Stevenson, like a Tyson Chandler. Those guys brought in a defensive mentality for the Mavericks. And that defensive mentality was the big reason why the Mavericks won the NBA title last year. They defend. And when you defend, you can win in any league, any sport. And that is the case with the National Basketball Association. And that's what made the Dallas Mavericks NBA champions last year. And you look at now, you look around the league, and you see some surprises. And one of those surprises are the Philadelphia 76ers. Beat the Bobcats last night, 13-6, on top of the Atlantic Division right now, and playing some decent basketball. But I said this 2 weeks ago, I believe. Maybe it was 3 weeks ago. But I pointed to a stretch where the Sixers would have to play, and it starts on January 30th. Starts Monday, actually, the big stretch that the Philadelphia 76ers have. And that stretch includes, and make sure you listen here, it starts with the Orlando Magic, 12-7 Orlando Magic. Team is playing some decent basketball, but struggling right now, 3-game losing streak this week. Then you have the Chicago Bulls. You have the Magic at home. You got the Bulls at home as well. Then you have the Miami Heat at home, a team that beat you, blew you out last week. Then you go to Atlanta on February 4th. And then that Monday, February 6th, you have the Lakers coming to your building. Wednesday, February 8th, you have the Spurs coming to your building. And then Friday, February 10th, you have Blake Griffin and the Los Angeles Clippers coming to your building. So, that should tell us a lot about this Sixer team. Orlando, January 30th. Chicago, February 1st. Miami, February 3rd. Atlanta, February 4th. The Lakers, February 6th. The Spurs, February 8th. And the Clippers, February 10th. Those seven games should tell you a lot about the Philadelphia 76ers. You will find out a lot about that team. You will find out whether or not they are real. You shall find out if they're really real. You should find that out. I mean, you look at the Sixers this week, who they beat? They beat the Wizards. They always beat the Wizards. They beat the Wizards three times, and they beat them by a lot of points. Blew the Wizards out, and that was enough. That actually cost Flip Saunders his job as he was fired after that game. But you look at their wins. The Suns under 500. The Warriors under 500. The Pistons, a team under 500. The Raptors under 500. Beat an over 500 team in the Pacers. Danny Granger did not play that night. The Kings under 500. They lost to the Knicks, a team that is under 500 right now, but at the time, we're not. You beat the Wizards on back-to-back nights. You beat the Bucks under 500. We all know the Wizards are one of the worst teams of basketball right now. You beat the Hawks in impressive fashion, and that's a good victory there. You lose to Miami, get blown out by the Heat without Dwayne Wade. Granted, you didn't have Spencer Halls, but Dwayne Wade did not play for the Miami Heat. He still got blown out. You lost to the Nuggets, another above 500 team. And you lose to the Nets in overtime this past Wednesday. Team under 500, not playing good basketball. Team riddled with injuries. So, again, are the Sixers, they're 13-6, they're playing much better, balanced scoring, getting big-time defense, well-coached by Doug Collins. They are improved. They are an improved team. But let's look at them. Let's look at what's going to happen. That stretch from January 30th to February 10th. Seven games in that span. In those seven games, you're playing seven straight teams above 500. You will find out a lot about yourself. And right now the Sixers are 13-6. Win tonight, a game they should win against the Pistons. You're 14-6. looking at that seven-game stretch, the Sixers could be 14-13 after that seven-game stretch. They could be 14-13 after that seven-game stretch. So it is possible that this team could be 14-13 after that seven-game stretch. Now, granted, Orlando's at home. Chicago's at home. Miami's at home. So six of those games are at home. Six of those games are at home, and this team is very good at home. If you can go 4-3, 3-4 during this stretch, I think you've done well. And there may not be another team in this league who's going to go through a stretch like that. I mean, these are some big-time teams they're going to be playing. Chicago and Miami, arguably the two best teams in the Eastern Conference, arguably the two best teams in this league. The Lakers, the Spurs, the Clippers, the up-and-coming Clippers. And the Hawks are still playing some good basketball without Al Horford. This should tell you a lot about the Sixers. You will find out a lot about the Philadelphia 76ers. We shall see what the Sixers really are. We shall see what the Sixers really are. We shall see. And this week, last Sunday morning, former Penn State coach, the great Joe Paterno, passed away. Died. Complications from lung cancer. He was 85 years old. And you look at Joe Paterno, and a lot of people will look at his legacy and point to the issue, the situation that happened recently with the whole Jerry Sandusky thing and what he did back in 2002, whether or not he did enough, whether or not he did little, or what some could say he did enough, some could say most are saying that he did not do enough. I guess in hindsight, and Joe would tell you, in hindsight he probably would have done things a little differently. He probably would have done things a little differently. But should we stain this man after that one incident? Should one incident stain you? All the good he's done throughout his life. All the good he's done throughout his life. Should he be stained by that one incident? That his decision, some could say, not to do the right thing. His decision not to really push this situation, not to really be the one who spearheaded the investigation of Jerry Sandusky. Should we blame him, or should we say, you know what, he did his job, as Phil Knight, CEO of Nike, said during his memorial service. Phil Knight believes that Joe Paterno did his job. And in some respect, he did do his job. He did tell his superiors what had happened. He told them. Now, maybe he could have done a little more. Because at the time, Joe Paterno was and is Penn State. So maybe he could have done a little more. Maybe he could have. But, you know, he said in an interview with Sally Jenkins of the Washington Post that he really did not know how to handle it. He really did not know how to handle it. And you know what? I mean, to whom much is given, much is expected. But is it possible that he really did not know how to handle it? Is it possible? He's a pro. I mean, he's a football coach. He's not a social worker. He's a football coach. Is it possible that he really did not know how to handle it? Is that possible? Is it possible? I mean, is it possible that he really did not know how to handle it? Is that possible? Is that possible? And you look at it, and I know all last week when I was hearing former Penn State coach, and when you hear former, it's kind of odd because Joe Paterno, in a lot of ways, is Penn State. He, in a lot of ways, is Penn State. He is Penn State. And you knew, sad to say, that once he did get fired, you knew that it wouldn't be long for him. A lot of people believe that in a lot of ways he died of a broken heart. And former Florida State coach Bobby Bowden said it this way: you can die of heartbreak. I'm sure Joe Paterno had some heartbreak too. And you look at it, I think football kept him alive. Football kept Joe Paterno alive, and I think that's why he hung on to it as long as he did. That's why he hung on to it as long as he did, because football was a part of who he was. Football was a part of his life for 60-some-odd years. He spent 46 years at Penn State as the coach. Football was who he was in a lot of ways. And you look at it, a lot of times you look in life, you see people work their fingers to the bone, but the moment they retire, they really don't have anything else to live for. And they don't last long. They do not last long from there. And then you look at some people who lose a spouse. They're with their spouse most of their life, married 40-plus years with their spouse, and then one day out of the blue, the spouse dies. Sometimes they don't last long. And you see it, guys, they don't last long. People don't last long after that. The reality is some people die of a broken heart. Some people die of a broken heart. Some people die of a broken heart. And I think Joe Paterno died of a broken heart. I think he died of a broken heart. Football was taken away from him. And that was it. So you hear the lung cancer, you hear he has lung cancer, and then from there, he doesn't last long. Does not last long. 409 games, which is a record. 46 years as a coach. 61 in total with the university. He was a legend. And some people can choose to say that this stains his legacy. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to stain his legacy with this. Did he do all he should have done? Probably not. But did he do something? Yes. Was he the one who allegedly molested kids? No. No. That's Jerry Sandusky, not Joe Paterno. So to me, in my mind, looking at this whole situation, I'm not one who believes in this particular situation that one incident stains who he is, stains his reputation. He seemingly was a good man, did a lot of good for a lot of people, gave a lot of money to the university, married to his wife for a very long time, seemed to raise 5 decent kids, did a lot for a lot of people. And, you know, he said it in that interview with Sally Jenkins, and I talked about how he really did not know how to handle it. He talked about how he was paralyzed by the matter. And the reality is he said he had to back away. And he said he trusted his boss, his bosses to handle it. He said he did not know which way to go. And rather than get in there and make a mistake, he did not know what to do. And I think that happens to people. It happens to people. It truly happens to people that we don't know how to handle a situation. So rather than make a mistake, we choose to do nothing. It happens. Was it the right thing to do for Joe Paterno? Again, probably not. It was not the right thing to do. In hindsight, he probably would have done it differently. But we all know what hindsight is. It's 2020. And I think if we all had a few things that we could take back or do differently, we would. We would. But Joe Paterno chose to do what he thought was the right thing to do at the time. It turned out it was the wrong thing to do. But I got to give Joe Paterno this and say this about him. I don't think that one incident stains who he is as a man and as a person. I really don't. But that's just my opinion on the matter. Just my opinion. You're listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio. Being joined by the host of Picture Rico and the Hub Network, and also, and we're back. We are back, and we're going to be joined very shortly now by 49er safety Madiyu Williams. We're going to get his thoughts on that big game last week against the New York Giants. Should be interesting to get his thoughts, and we're going to bring him now. Let's bring in now safety for the San Francisco 49ers. The one, the only, Madiyu Williams. Madiyu, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Paul. How about yourself?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it.
And Madiyu, let's get right down to it. It's been almost a week now since your loss to the New York Giants. At this point, does it still stink for you?
It does, a little bit. It's still unreal for us to be at home right now and not preparing to play in the Super Bowl.
Right, and I look at that game, Madiyu, and you played the Giants earlier in the season. This time around, did the Giants do anything differently to you guys, or was it pretty much the same?
Well, you know what? They had a different game plan, obviously, than they did the second time around. But going into it, man, we thought we had a good chance, just like any other team would, being confident. But my hat got to go off to them, man. They did a great job of executing the game plan. They did a good job of pressuring our quarterback, more so than they did the first time. And I think that's a credit to them. And more importantly, they did a good job against the run.
And I look at you guys on the defensive side of football. First half, the Giants were able to move the ball a little bit against you guys. But that second half, the defense adjusted and you guys shut them down. What did you do differently in the second half?
I think one of the things we did, obviously, our coverage got better than it did the first half. We were able to stay a little bit more in front. Are they secondary? I mean, they're wide receivers. And the secondary did a great job with just knowing where Victor Cruz is going to be prior to the ball being snapped, just being more aware of how they're going to attack us. And, of course, our front four did a great job of pressuring Eli. And you always hear that the rushing coverage worked together. And in our game last week, especially in the second half, that held true.
And, Medill, in any football game, you don't want to blame one person for a loss. Those two fumbles by Kyle Williams were big. But I got the sense in watching the game that the Giants, to me, in that second half, they were not going to score on a long field. If they had a long field, in my mind, I thought you guys were going to shut them down. Talk about that.
Well, you know what? Any good defense, especially in the National Football League, you want to make sure that teams put drives together. You never want to give up the big play. And I thought that my defensive backs did a great job of not allowing the big play throughout the game. And in order for us to win the game or for them to have a chance, we will have to put a drive together. And it's unfortunate that something like that happened to a player like Kyle, just because he worked so hard, you know, in and out of practice, and just having the stage that we were on to see that happen was definitely devastating. But the game, in my opinion, is a field position game, but most certainly didn't come down to that. There was other plays in the game that could have affected the outcome of the game other than those plays that, unfortunately, Kyle was involved in.
And speaking of Kyle Williams, man, my heart goes out to the guy. I mean, a big stage like that and those two fumbles. You got the death threats and everything going out there, which obviously is crazy stuff. I mean, it is football after all. But did you get an opportunity to talk to him?
Yes, I did. I spoke to him the next day and just kind of embraced with him, give him a hug, and let him know, man, it's going to be all right. Especially a player of Kyle's caliber, has a great future ahead of him, and he's only in his second year. And you don't want that play to define a guy's career, especially being so young. Just let him know that he's going to have other opportunities in the future to which he can redeem himself. And he's got to be ready. And a situation such as that happened to Kyle can either go one way. It can either be detrimental for the rest of his career, be a career-defining moment, or it could be one of those things that changes a guy's outlook and helps him out for the better and turn him into a perennial Pro Bowl player in the future. So hopefully we're leaning towards the latter for Kyle and just wish him the best of luck in the future.
We're talking to 49er safety Medill Williams. And Medill, you signed with the 49ers this offseason. When you came into this situation, did you expect these guys to be 13-3, you guys, I should say, to be 13-3 and this good?
Well, you know what? Honestly, probably not, because you got to factor in the short off season that we had, or the lack of off season that we had, and one of the things that a lot of people don't talk about is the fact the injury factor. We were so fortunate and so blessed throughout the season not to have severe injuries in key positions to key members on the football team. But no, I mean, going into the season, you don't know what type of team you're gonna have. But one thing that I was certain going into it, Paul, was the fact that we have a lot of character on that team. And we had a lot of great foundation pieces already in place going into the season. And I thought that we were going to be competitive going into the season. That I was sure about. But in terms of the record, no, I had no clue. Just like the rest of the guys didn't have any clue.
And speaking of the guys, one of the guys who brought character to the 49ers, Jim Harbaugh, the coach. I mean, he seemed to bring a different attitude to this team. How much did you enjoy playing for Coach Harbaugh?
It was a blast. It was a blast going to work every day and having that blue-collar mentality and just punching the clock. Took a lot of pride in it. And a lot of guys were able to rally around that philosophy of being a blue-collar team and doing the little things in order for you to win games on Sundays. And I think that's going to serve him well in the future.
And, Medill, you will be a free agent this year, or should I say next year. The 49ers, they're building something nice here, as you said. Would you like to return to this situation?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a great situation, and the potential of what lies ahead is tremendous. But I'm aware of the business of professional sports in the National Football League, and this not being my first time being a free agent, that you never know how things are going to go and what's going to happen out there once the free agency starts. So it's kind of you kind of just make sure that you let everybody know what you would love to do, but also you never know what can happen come March.
And do you want to be a starter again in this league? I mean, obviously everybody wants to be a starter, but are you looking for a situation where you can be a starter?
If the situation presents itself, Paul, absolutely, absolutely. I feel as though that I'm still a starting caliber safety in the National Football League. But it's not about your opinion; it's about what the 32 teams who are out there how they view you as. So, if the opportunity presents itself, absolutely. If not, hopefully, I'll be able to contribute to a football team next year.
We're talking to 49er safety Madiyu Williams, and Madiyu, you lost NFC title games, two NFC title games in heartbreak fashion. And in a lot of ways, I look at both of those games and I say, with the Vikings, you should have won. And I say here, with the 49ers, you should have won. I mean, how tough is these things for you?
Well, you sound like me after the game. But at the end of the day, man, one of the things that happened, Paul, is the fact that you got to be able to capitalize when the opportunity presents itself. And in both of those instances, in Minnesota and here with the 49ers, it was unfortunate that there was a play that kind of dictated the whole season for us. But like I said earlier in the interview, there were instances throughout the game that we had an opportunity to make plays that we didn't capitalize on and we didn't execute on. And it's unfortunate that the only plays that people remember are the ones that kind of cost you.
Right.
But when you watch the film, there's always three or four, maybe up to five plays that you wish you can have back. And I'm sure when I go back and look at the film in Minnesota, that's always going to be the case. But it's unfortunate. But I hope that I get another opportunity. And that next opportunity, the third time, will be a charm for whichever team I'm with.
And does any of these games hurt more than the other, or does it hurt the same? Is it equal?
I think this one, just being so close to the Super Bowl, the first
right.
time, I never thought I'd be in a position like I was this season to possibly play in the Super Bowl. To come up short, it leaves you wondering as to whether or not you get another opportunity.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of guys that have played a long time that have never been close to even, or never been in the playoffs, but yet alone be in a position to win NFC Championship to go to the Super Bowl. So I've been very blessed and very fortunate in that regard, but I'm still hungry. I'm still looking forward to that opportunity and to play in the Super Bowl, but not necessarily play, but to go and play and win.
Right, right, and that makes a lot of sense. And you're very hungry on the field, but you're very hungry off the field with doing work in the community. You're doing a lot of work in the community. You were NFL 2010 Man of the Year, so you're doing work there. With your foundation, the Madiyu Williams Foundation, talk about some of the things you guys are doing, because you're doing a lot of great stuff.
Well, one of the things that we are doing currently is just focusing on our after-school program in Prince George's County, Maryland, at Hyattsville Elementary School. We have a mentoring program, life skills, and physical activity program that we conduct every Wednesday at Hyattsville Elementary School with 20 to 25 kids currently, and that's been our main focus, just trying to provide them an avenue and an outlet for them to better themselves educationally and also physically. And we're very excited about what the program brings to the children as well as they are, and we're looking to expand as the future presents itself.
And Madiyu, I was on the website and I saw a quote that really stuck out to me. I'm going to read it to you. You will find, as you look back on life, that the moments that stand out are the moments when you've done things for others. Talk about that quote, because it seems to epitomize who you are.
Well, you know what? When you look back in life, there's a lot of things that you're going to wish that you would have done. And one of the things that stick out with me is just reaching out and helping other people. And at the end of the day, I'm a firm believer that part of your legacy is making sure that you leave the world a better place. And as a human being, I'm just trying to touch as many people as possible, while utilizing this platform that I've been blessed with to play this wonderful game called football. And that's all I try to do, Paul, is just try to impact and touch lives as much as I can in the community and places where I've been, and just make the world, leave the world a lot better than when I was brought in.
And I know you've done a lot of things in Sierra Leone. Are you planning on doing that this off season?
Yeah.
Are you going to head over there?
Yeah, I try to head over there as much as I can. We have a commitment there with a school that we support, that we built a few years ago, and we try to make sure that we go back there and spend a lot of time not only with the children but also providing support for the staff there as well. And one of the things, interesting that you brought that up, that we are looking to do is a partnership with the University of Maryland School of Engineering. Hopefully this off season is to have them come along and we're trying to bring electricity to the community where the school is located. There's a rural area, and we're looking to implement solar panels in the school, which will provide electricity for the community and the people that live there as well. So it's a huge project, and it's something that we're looking to do this off season, and we're excited about that also.
And again, you are doing some big things in the community. Where can people find information about all the things you're doing with the Medini Williams Foundation?
They can definitely follow us on Twitter. Medini Williams is the username. But more importantly, our website, MediniWilliams.org, www.MediniWilliams.org, provide information on it. They can submit their email where they can receive quarterly information on the things that we're working on. And also, we have a Facebook page, Medina Williams Foundation, on Facebook. It has plenty of information of what's happening with us and things that I'm involved in currently.
Well, Medina, you're involved in a lot of great things on and off the field, and that's a great thing for you. And I my heart and everything goes out to you, man. You come on here and coming off a tough loss, I really appreciate it. And also, man, I got to give you a lot of credit for the work you're doing in the community. We need a lot more people like you doing work in the community, because the community definitely needs it. Appreciate you doing that.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Have a good off season. Let's do it again.
Will do, man. Anytime. You take care.
All right. 49er safety, Mediu Williams. And, again, he's doing some great things in the community. And the community needs it. The community needs it. He was named last year NFL Man of the Year, 2010 NFL Man of the Year. Give him a lot of credit for that. He's doing a lot of work with his foundation and doing a lot of great work in the community. Give him credit. Give him credit. A lot of credit, actually, because, I mean, there's a lot of people who can always do more, and we can always do more in our communities. Our communities need us, and he is one who is doing some great work in the community. So make sure you go to his website, mediuwilliams.org, and that's M-A-D-I-E-U, Williams, calming smelling, .org. Again, that's M-A-D-I-E-U, Williams, calming spelling, .org. So make sure you go there and support all the great things he is doing in this community. Support it, support it, support it. Another 5 minutes left in the show, and you look at it, the Super Bowl is coming up next week. Big time things with the media. Media day is always a fun day at the Super Bowl. I mean, it's going to be a rematch, and I think it's going to be a very good Super Bowl. Very good Super Bowl. A very good Super Bowl next week. And I'm looking forward to it. I'll watch it. I will watch it. I will watch it, and it's going to be interesting. Interested to see what happens. Interested to see what happens. Giants playing good football. Patriots playing good football as well. Both of these teams playing good football at the right time. We shall see who gets it over, who wins, and who does get it done in the Super Bowl. We shall see. We shall see. We shall see. And looking at it now, Speaking of somebody who's getting it done and getting it done with a whole lot of money, Prince Fielder. Prince Fielder signs with the Detroit Tigers. Signs with the Detroit Tigers this week. 9 years, $214 million. $214 million. What a country. 9 years, $214 million. Prince Fielder. Getting it done. I mean, that's some good time money there. That's some big time money. And I look at this deal, and you look at Albert Pujols, who got a big deal, but Prince Fielder's younger than Albert Pujols. He's a younger player, 27 years old, and by the time this contract ends, he'll be 36. But you look at it, he's in the prime of his career. He's in the prime of his career. And you look at Albert Pujols with the Los Angeles Angels. I mean, he's late in his career. He's later in his career. I mean, Prince Fielder is only 27 years old. 27 years old. Albert Pujols is 31. 32, excuse me. Prince Fielder, 27. 5 years younger. So you're getting a guy 5 years younger than Prince Fielder. A guy who's put up comparable numbers, a guy who had a very good last year for the Milwaukee Brewers. A very good last year for the Milwaukee Brewers. So you look at it, who got the better of the deals in terms of if you're the Tigers or if you're the Anaheim Angels, the Los Angeles Angels, and getting Albert Pujols? To me, the team that got the better deal is the Milwaukee Brewers, not the Milwaukee Brewers, the Detroit Tigers. They got the better deal. Prince Fielder's 27 years old, everybody. Albert Pujols is 32. A five-year difference. After 10 years with Albert Pujols, he'll be 42 years old. After 9 years with Prince Fielder, he'll be 36 years old. So, you look at it, who got the better deal, the Tigers or the Angels, the Los Angeles Angels? I have to say, the Detroit Tigers got the better end of this. For the mere fact that Prince Fielder is 27 years old, Albert Pujols is 32 years old. It's a big difference. Prince Fielder last year, 38 home runs, 120 RBI, .299 batting average. Hit for average, for power. I mean, big time numbers for Prince Fielder. Albert Pujols last year, 37 home runs, .99 RBI. Same batting average, .299. Albert Pujols is going to be 32. Prince Fielder's 27. 32, 27. And Prince Fielder will be 28 in May. So before the start of the season, both one will be 32, one will be 28. 4 year difference. I think the Detroit Tigers got the better end, got a better deal with Prince Fielder. I really do. They got a better deal there. But we want to thank Madiyu Williams for stopping by. And again, make sure you go to his website, MadiyuWilliams.org, so you can find out about his foundation. He was the 2010 NFL Man of the Year, so he's doing some great work in the community. So make sure you go to his website, MadiyuWilliams.org. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgame, where you can listen to this great show and other shows. And also follow us on Twitter at GoForItGan. For everybody here at Go For It, we hope you have a nice day. We'll see you next week. And we're going to be joined next week by Barry Floyd of the game. So make sure you stick up with us next week. See you later. Bye.